Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books, an independent New Orleans bookstore. Additional support comes from the University of Louisiana Lafayette Press and the Helles Foundation. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. Today I'll be talking with Brian Batt and Katie Danos about their wonderful new book, Pontchartrain Beach, A Family Affair. And we'll remember a conversation with Little Free Library founder Todd Bowl. It is such a pleasure to welcome the award-winning stage and film actor Brian Batt back to The Reading Life. Brian began his literary career with the utterly charming She Ain't Heavy, She's My Mother, a memoir of his mom, Gail Batt. Today, he's joining us with Katie Danos, his co-author of their two most recent books, Big Easy Style, one of the most fun home decorating books I have ever read, as well as this joyful, smile-producing new book, Pontchartrain Beach, A Family Affair. Katie, welcome.
Thank you, Susan.
You too, Brian. Oh, welcome back.
Thank you. It's so great to be back here.
Now, so much of this book is a tribute to your grandfather, Brian. So you have one of the best opening lines ever in a book, and it is, "My father's father was an iceman, and he overcame us."
Yes, I think, you know, a little Eugene O'Neill helped out there, but it was one of the original stories that I started to write about my grandfather. And we kept that line
years ago,
and it just sat on my computer, and I didn't know how it would fit in eventually, but it did, and we kept it, and it's the truth. My great-grandfather's business was an ice business, a successful ice business in the city. My grandfather was working at the business when he saw a Model T. You know, he was driving his cart along St. Charles and saw a Model T racing the other way with a refrigerator and thought, I've got to get out of this business.
This is the end.
You know, he thought, what did the city need? And it needed family entertainment. And that's a simpler story. But, and the rest is history.
But he was a great character. Ooh. And I see a lot of him in you. So tell us about him.
He was larger than life. He was very theatrical. In fact, he wanted to be an actor. He wanted to go out to Hollywood. And my grandmother was vehemently against it. He also wanted to go into politics. She was vehemently against that, too. An odd thing is that, you know, his grandsons, one's an actor and one's a politician. But when he walked into a room, there was no one else. And he was so warm and supportive. And he wanted to know what the newest thing was, what was going on. He had his finger on the pulse of what was happening at the time, the Moors of the time. And he died, unfortunately, when I was 14. So I never got to know him as an adult. I just knew him as this larger-than-life theatrical. I mean, he dressed, oh, my God. His car, I mean, everything about him was larger than life, even his heart.
Oh, well, you have the pictures in this book to prove it.
Oh, yes.
I mean, everybody's crazy about a sharp-dressed man, you know? But one of the great stories in this book is how the business of show, as you call it, is truly a family business and was weaving its way into the history of our city as well. And your grandfather was always very dedicated to looking out for the best rides, the newest rides, which led to some great summer vacations, didn't it?
Yes, yes. Katie actually discovered my grandmother's journal, her travel journal.
Right.
Yeah. And found some really interesting entries, you know. But they traveled the world finding new rides and new things for the beach. He always wanted the beach to be, you know, top of the line for the city.
And I never had the opportunity to meet Brian's grandfather. So I really wanted to get to know him through other people who knew them, not just Brian, but his cousins, first cousins, who are older, a little older. So their stories, I mean, they have a story of living in the little house below the Zephyr.
Uh-huh.
That's just a fabulous story. And I'm fascinated with the fact that he only had an eighth grade education. He joined the family business because he needed to, and not only became an expert internationally with the amusement park business, but always remained interested in education, whether that be for Delgado or...
He was very civic-minded.
Yes, absolutely.
But also, your grandfather knew my grandfather.
I love that story. Yes.
Yes.
So tell that story.
Well, Brian and I went to Tulane the same years, and so we knew each other. And when I joined Hazelnut, the business that he started with his husband, Tom, we were chit-chatting about grandfathers and grandmothers, and I mentioned to my dad, I'm working with Brian Batt. Old man Batt, your grandfather, the turtle soup man, brought that, it was the best soup anywhere, and he knew, and came in almost every week, every other week. They knew each other very well.
To deliver turtle soup to the beach.
Oh. So we thought that was like, that was
you were destined
uncanny.
You know, there's six people in New Orleans. The rest is done with mirrors.
That's right.
Everybody somehow knows somebody somewhere.
Right.
Well, at the beginning, I mean, you all are longtime collaborators and friends. So at the beginning, Katie, you said you wanted to find your way into this story.
Yes.
That you were looking for.
Yes. As you know, writing a book is a major undertaking. And Brian was ready to go for the next project. What's the next project? So he said, I have all this memorabilia. And so I thought, you know, before I say yay or nay, let me see it. Let's see. You know, how can I connect to it? Do we think there's enough to say? What would we bring new to the information? And it was really easy to see quickly. He had the copies of what was called the Breezy Brevities in the 40s, the newspaper that the beach put out. And I'm seeing, you know, free roller coaster ride for a report card with A's, or bring your sunbean bread wrapper for a free day at the beach. All the community actions, the prizes, you know, photos of women with pots and pans during the war years that were the prizes. And then the beauty pageants.
Nylons. Remember the
nylons?
Oh,
and the nylons.
Oh, yes.
That was a big deal. So we really, I was like, wow, there's a culture here.
And it was tangible.
Explore.
It was so tangible.
Right.
You know, you talk about, you know, what happened during the war or post-war and the baby boom, or even this started, actually, the amusement park started in the 20s. You know, but here we had in our hands actual documentation, pictures, which we shared in the book, advertisements of what it was like and how
Marguerite
it progressed.
Was a writer. She, you know, a lot of people only think of it as Harry Batt.
Oh.
But she was in it. From the very beginning, she kept the books, she did all the correspondence, she traveled everywhere with him. Through that, we could read her commenting in letters home to Brian's cousins. Dad tested a new ride. It was something to do with the water, the log flume. And we've been wanting to try that, and we thought he would fall flat on his fanny. They were sports. They were very together.
Tom and I just got back from Rome, and I remember reading some of her journals of traveling. And they were out to like 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning in their 60s, dancing. And all these jobs, like out.
And up early to go to the factory.
To see everything.
But just, I mean, I was so, reading all this and learning about my grandfather, I was so inspired. And it really brought him back to life for me in a way that I never knew him. And I have such a even more appreciation and admiration and love for him and what he did for us and the city after doing this.
And I love the story of how he became the OG. I thought that was hilarious.
I mean, they're Brian's personal stories and the cousins' personal stories, but they're universal in the sense of the OG.
Yes.
Or
the
big brother maybe taunting the little brother. Or stories of the dates, some of the dating patterns. I mean, they're universal stories, but shown in a very personal way.
And I loved that when we put out our feelers on Facebook and in the paper.
Right.
All these stories that came in of people that worked there and visited, they're so fun and rich and
wonderful stories.
And it's
they
really
had
heartwarming.
This great sense of belonging.
Yes.
That the family sense extended to the entire enterprise.
One of the first time I heard about the painted quarters was at the meeting with Brian and Jay, Brian's brother and the cousins, and they were all talking about they could come over to the beach, go to the office, and Brian had, did you have the red quarters?
I had the red quarters.
And Jay had the blue quarters, meaning they could just use the quarters and have fun at the end of the day. The quarters would get pulled out of the till and put back in for the next day. And that was the first I heard of the painted quarters. But as the stories came in, the longtime MC's daughter said, I would love to go and visit Dad in the afternoon after school because I could go to the office and get painted quarters and I could do anything all day long. And one of the lifeguards' kids said that, you know, because we're getting things, stories and scrapbooks from people that are mentioning their parents worked there for so long. The painted quarters was
A big deal. Speaking
of
lifeguards,
it was a big deal, not just for the kids.
Yeah, speaking of lifeguards, you know, Frank Mignard was one of the main
lifeguards.
I love
that picture. Frank Mignard said he saved more lives
as a lifeguard. You know, that's one of the things the beach was. It was a man-made beach open to the public in a time when you didn't really go swimming in the lake.
Of course.
That was the place to go. You know, and as I, you know, was born in the early 60s, 1963, so pretty much you couldn't swim anymore. After the pollution, it wasn't. Thank God it's okay now. There's been so many changes and so so much growth. Coming over here to do the interview, every time I pass where it stood, I get this little little twinge in my heart.
Yeah.
But the lighthouse stands.
Yes,
which is
it
wonderful.
Does. Now, you go into such detail in the history of individual rides, which I love, and the Zephyr. There are kids named Zephyr because of that roller coaster, you know?
Lots of family pets.
And you talk a lot about what it meant to have a steel roller coaster and a wooden roller coaster.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That there were certain kinds of rides you had to have to be a self-respecting park.
Yes,
of that
definitely.
Type.
Yes.
You know, it was a time, I think, you know, prior to the 70s, that these individually family-owned amusement parks, every community or city had one or two up and down the Eastern Seaboard. I'll never forget, you know, speaking of the Zephyr, I was in rehearsal for a workshop of a musical with Elaine Stritch. And the assistant choreographer, when the first day of rehearsal, came running over to me and he goes, Brian Batt. Pontchartrain Beach, the Zephyr. I'm like, how do you know this? You know, he was a roller coaster aficionado, but he knew every fact about the Zephyr. Things I had no idea of.
Oh, I love
so
that.
I love the outreach.
We found
of
lots
that.
Of things that we would never have known had we not really.
Oh, Katie leaves no stone unturned. She
felt like
is,
a detective.
Yeah, you are. You're the Columbo of writing. You're just like, it's a, you know,
always with one more question.
The Jessica Fletcher.
Well, you know, with the internet, one thing leads to the other.
Of course. It's a rabbit hole.
We got a scrapbook of pictures from a woman it was her father that was the master of ceremonies for many nights. And the pictures, sometimes it's hard to read the name, or you would see a piece of a name of the different trapeze artist or the nerveless Knox. And so if I could get that much in, sure enough, you would then learn they were the top trapeze artists internationally. So that was amazing.
Yeah.
Well, in its long history, I mean, because it was 55 years, which is a huge chunk of New Orleans history.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also got an important part in our musical history as well.
Yes.
You know, Dr. John backing up the Beach Boys.
Yeah.
Elvis Presley.
Yeah. I mean, the Animals. I mean, Roy Orbison, Irma Thomas, you know, Fats Domino.
Your band.
My band. The Singles. Maybe you've not heard
singles.
Of them.
The Singles.
Yeah, boy. Yeah, it was that on the stages, there were always something great to see. And I think it was...
And it was at no charge. It was
free. It was
yeah.
free, you know, with admission. No, my grandfather, I remember when all the controversy... Well, I don't remember this. I read. He told me, you know, all this controversy about Elvis Presley and people, you know, it's the devil's music. And,
of course.
He's a fine young man. He said he was a fine young man. I don't understand what the problem is. You know,
I don't either. I never have.
You know, me either.
Now, the photos in this book is gorgeous. It is so much fun to look at.
Thank you.
And it seems to capture a sweeter, simpler time. Mm-hmm. These people seem so innocent on the boardwalk.
Mm-hmm.
It was conservative in a way.
Yes.
It was a family place. I mean,
absolutely.
My father, when the Animals were playing there. They were saying some off-color things and things children really shouldn't hear.
Mm-hmm.
And they pulled the plug. Everyone thought the electricity went out. No, they pulled the plug on the Animals. But it was a more innocent time, you know?
I think so. And when families would gather, you know, now you think of the dinner table, if there is one, people on their gadgets, they're not really speaking, they're not really congregating. And I love the stories of the teenagers saying that their moms would drop them off or they would ride their bikes, and within minutes they'd find their tribe.
Yeah.
No cell phone. No prearranged plans. Yeah. They would just, you know, meet me at the Clown's Head.
The Clown's Head was quite large.
Right. Yes.
Meet me at the carousel.
Meet me at whatever.
Yeah. You know, it was a big thing then, you know, to hold someone's hand and, mm-hmm. you know, get to ride in the haunted house and maybe sneak a kiss.
You had a very embarrassing kiss.
I did. Yes,
personally.
I did. I got my face slapped. and I deserved it.
And Harry Connick Jr. talks about getting coached.
Yes. That's a great story.
We've kissed a lot of stories about romance in the haunted house.
Yes.
Many. We tried to, of course, choose the ones that were written, because we didn't really change other people's words, mm-hmm. that were the funniest or maybe the most universal. But we received many about the kissing or on the sky ride.
The sky ride.
Because you're up there so long, just the two of you.
Hello, and if it's dark.
Yes.
Yeah.
We
also have great stories about, you know, Bally High, which was, you know.
That was my next thought.
Yeah.
We have such nostalgia for these lost restaurants.
Right.
And that was the glamorous part of Pontchartrain Beach.
Katie pointed out about how part of it, she said she remembered, was the drive out to, you know, like the journey. Like you really are taking a trip. And once you get there, you're in another world.
Right.
Speaking of Columbo and Jessica Fletcher, there was a picture of my grandfather with two actresses, one beautiful blonde lady and one beautiful Asian lady.
We knew they were not just guests. But they weren't famous enough for us to know
who.
But it just was nagging at me. Who are these dames?
And who did they turn out to be? One was an actress, you know, from
Louisiana. And one was, she was the part in...
She played Liat in South Pacific, Pacific had come out.
So obviously they had made an appearance of some type. And there he is, you know, sipping through
One of the tiki bowl.
Yes.
Oh, of course.
Yeah,
tiki bowl.
But her name, one of the names was just, you couldn't even read it on the picture.
We couldn't read
it. But if you just type movies of that era or the first name or...
Yeah.
It was fun, the detective work.
Can see it in all the information that's just packed in here.
Packed a lot.
Katie's so great about this. She said, you know, we didn't, and it's so true, we never want to write just Ain't There No More, you know?
Yeah.
In fact, we asked some people some stories, and some people would just say, oh, yeah, I like to ride the Zephyr. That's not a story. When you lose your wig on the Zephyr and it flies into the tree and some bird makes a nest in it, now that's a story.
Yes. Or you get engaged.
Or you get engaged at the top
yes,
of the Zephyr.
And Carolyn
you stick the
Cobb.
Ring, right,
yes.
stick the ring in your mouth
that's
so it doesn't...
That's a story.
You know, those are the stories that, you know, we laugh at it. And we all have these kind of stories. And that's what we wanted to share. And we wanted to make people remember this and smile.
And you've got such sweet stories from people like Walter Isaacson, yes. Michael Lewis, and ordinary folks.
Yeah.
I mean,
yes.
just ordinary folks.
Rex Reed, people who worked there, you know, Stephen Forrester. I love the story
yes,
of Stephen
I
Forrester
did too.
With his aunt. And, you know, it was such a fun, wonderful, joyous place. I just wanted to, we both wanted to not,
and
we
can't
also recreate, but
wanted
bring that feeling back.
To give Harry Betts Sr. his due.
Of course.
We really did. Because I think most people think of it as something hometown, but he was the president of associations, the International Amusement Park Association. He spoke before Congress many times having to do with taxes. He landed the contract to do
the
gateway for
right.
the 1962 World's Fair. So
Which
I think people are
going to
be even prouder.
yeah.
Yes, and they still have the record.
Yeah.
Yep.
And still.
So I do think that locals who loved it are going to feel even prouder of our,
our
it's skills you can't teach in business school, what he had. He had an entrepreneurial spirit and a creative spirit, and so did she, Marguerite. And
what a marriage!
World class level.
Yes, they really did. They were.
Yes.
They were.
She had a great sense of humor. You can see that in the letters and the diaries.
She had a suitcase always packed just in case.
I love that about
her. He was ready to go. And her like, I'm coming. Yeah. You ain't going without me. You know?
Yes.
Well, I was thinking about this. I was thinking about you all in particular, and Tom, and Hazelnut, and the whole thing. And I remember this thing that Stanley Crouch wrote once about Louis Armstrong, and he said he was an ambassador for joy. And I think that's kind of a New Orleans trait.
Yes.
It is.
And you all embody that so much in this book.
You.
It's a real,
it's the highest form,
it's a great
moment.
Pleasure to read. So thank you.
Thank you.
We've been talking with Katie Danos and Brian Batt, co-authors of The Fun-Filled Pontchartrain Beach, A Family Affair. You can meet them Friday, November 2nd at 4 at Hazelnut. That's 5525 Magazine Street. The store Katie and Brian own with Brian's partner, Tom Chianfiki. Or Wednesday, November 7th at Garden District Bookshop at 6, or Saturday, November 17th at 11:30 at Barnes & Noble Metairie. Katie, Brian, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
America and the world lost a real literary hero October 18th when Todd Bowl, founder of Little Free Libraries, lost his battle with cancer. Todd visited New Orleans several times in his quest to get Little Free Libraries into every community to spread the joy of reading, and we thought we'd revisit our talk from 2014. Todd, welcome to The Reading Life.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So this all began, Little Free Libraries, as a tribute to a book-loving mother, right?
Correct. You know, I'm often asked if my mother was an avid reader, and I really never thought she was, because she just always read. And when you're a little kid growing up, you know, you just see your parents and you don't say, ah, there's an avid reader. But I found that she just read all the time, and we just thought that was a natural thing to do anyway. And she exchanged books with family members and friends and talked about them. And so I was always aware of that as a little kid.
And so then when she died, you built the first Little Free Library.
Yeah, and I built it, but there was kind of two things going on in my mind. One, when she died 10 years before that, I'd given away a little gift to people under the idea that it was an old colonial tradition in the United States to give a gift when somebody passes. Also, there's an old Sioux Indian tradition that says nobody really ever dies until all they've touched are gone. And so I made a little necklace that was in a heart shape, and it said June A. Bowl, a dancing spirit, 1927 through. So I felt my mother's spirit and how she was about life would, you know, dance on. And so I created the Little Free Library in honor of my mom and kind of her spirit and who she was. And she always tutored people, and we always had kids over the house that she was helping. And my mom was that kind of person that you likely felt better about yourself around her than anybody else. You know, she didn't die in my mind. She just kept living through so many different things. And so I created the little library to honor her and to, as a gift to the neighborhood. And that's how it started.
Linda Prout, the ambassador for Little Free Libraries in New Orleans, has this great announcement. New Orleans received one of 9 Marvel superhero Little Free Libraries given to cities across the country. Because Todd Bowl was always looking for ways to improve relations between police and the children they serve, its home will be the new 2nd District Police Station at 3401 Broadway. Boy Scouts will install the little library in the community plaza between the police station and the Gertown Natatorium. In addition, First Book and Disney Publishing will donate books to keep the library stocked for 2 years, so watch for this new Little Free Library coming soon. Todd Bowl's legacy is far from over. In New Orleans alone, there are more than 200 Little Free Libraries. Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Brian Kilmeade discusses Andrew Jackson and the Miracle of New Orleans with historian Ron Drez, Sunday, October 28th. That's at 1 at the Jewish Community Center, 5342 St. Charles Avenue. Tickets are available at Octavia Books. There will be a not-so-spooky Halloween costume party and story time for ages 10 and under, Sunday, October 28th from 1:30 to 3:30 at the Main Library, 219 Loyola in New Orleans. The East New Orleans Regional Library will also hold a family Halloween party Sunday, October 28th, from 1:30 to 3:30. Pulitzer Prize winner Annette Gordon-Reed, an American historian and legal scholar, will be the featured speaker in the next Tulane Aspen Institute Values in America Speaker Series event. When America's values are tested, lessons from Jefferson, Lincoln, and other great leaders in the age of Trump is her topic. That's Monday, October 29th from 1 to 2 in Rogers Memorial Chapel at Tulane University. Falwell Dunbar signs He Falls Well, A Memoir of Survival, Wednesday, October 30th at 6 at Octavia Books. Webb Hubble signs his new Jack Patterson thriller, The 18th Green, Thursday, November 1st at 6 p.m. at Garden District Bookshop. Tyler Bridges, author of the updated edition of The Rise and Fall of David Duke, and Robert Fiesler, author of Tinderbox, The Untold Story of the Upstairs Lounge Fire and the Rise of Gay Liberation, discuss their work Thursday, November 1st at 7 at the East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. There will be a sacred talk with Yeye Luisa Tisch, author of Carnival of the Spirits and Jambalaya, Friday, November 2nd at 6 at the Neighborhood Story Project, 2202 La Perouse Street. Brian Batt and Katie Danos discuss and sign Pontchartrain Beach, A Family Affair, Friday, November 2nd from 4 to 7 at Hazelnut, 5525 Magazine Street, Wednesday, November 7th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop, and Saturday, November 17th from 11 a.m. to 12:30 at Barnes & Noble Metairie. There will be a Drag Queen Story Hour and a debut of The Mermaids of New Orleans, Saturday, November 3rd at 10:30 at Hubble Library. Blanche Wiesen-Cook, historian and most notably the author of the three-volume Eleanor Roosevelt biography, and Claire Koss, playwright and librettist for Emmett Till the Opera, will speak on the many forms and aspects of biography for the Women's National Book Association's National Reading Group Month event, November 3rd at 6 at Xavier University Library. New York Times bestselling author Laura Lippman and award-winning illustrator Kate Samworth signed their children's book, Liza Jane and the Dragon, Saturday, November 3rd at 6 at Lemieux Galleries, 332 Julia. Tracy Duncan will teach a six-week course, Writing as Becoming, November 5th through December 10th, Mondays, from 6:30 to 9 at the Dragonfly, 3921 St. Claude Avenue. For registration and fees, email duncan.tracy, that's T-R-A-C-E-Y, at gmail.com. Octavia Books presents New York Times bestselling novelist Marissa Meyer and her second installment in the young adult series called Renegades. The follow-up is Arch Enemies. This is a ticketed event. Tickets are available at Octavia Books. Meyer appears Tuesday, November 6th at 6 at the Academy of the Sacred Hearts NIMS Fine Arts Center, 4301 St. Charles Avenue. Doors open at 5. The Louisiana Book Festival is coming up Saturday, November 10th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. on the grounds of the state capitol in Baton Rouge. More than 250 authors will appear at more than 100 programs. For more information, check out louisianabookfestival.org. Also coming up, Words and Music, a literary feast in New Orleans, takes place November 15th through 18th, headquartered at the Renaissance New Orleans Pere Marquette Hotel. Among the authors appearing are Leah Chase, Justin Nystrom, Jason Berry in conversation with T.R. Johnson, Kelly Harris DeBerry in conversation with Melissa Weber, DJ Soul Sister, Kim Vaz DeVille, Allison Pellegrin, James Nolan, Peter and Nicole Cooley, and Maurice Carlos Ruffin. For more information, check out their Facebook page. Join us for the Tricentennial Reading List every Tuesday at 8:44 a.m. and 5:44 p.m. The Tricentennial Reading List is brought to you by the Hellas Foundation, the John Burton Harter Trust, and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities. Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Christwood Retirement Community, the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press, and the Hellas Foundation. The theme song and end music for The Reading Life are by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Engmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at WWNO.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@WWNO.org.